are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock here with you once again on the show. If this is your first time, who am I? A former analyst at Pro Football Focus, used to write for RotoWire, used to push buttons and occasionally talk on the mic at KMBR, currently a radio sports and traffic reporter in the Bay Area. This is Locked On 49ers, your daily podcast on the San Francisco 49ers. We're getting into week three here, and my former colleague at Pro Football Focus, Jeff Deeney, is my guest today. He's the 49ers media correspondent, so we're going to get down and dirty into some of those statistics from the 49ers and possibly some others around the league from week one and two, and what to look forward to in that matchup in week three for San Francisco in Kansas City. But first, we got to get into the injury report. Who's going to be active? Who's healing up? Who's more hurt than they were last week for the 49ers? A couple of fantastic quotes that I saw on my timeline on Twitter today. And a real gut-wrenching story. Actually, let's start there. We'll start with the somber note, and then we'll get on to some lighter statistics and other things around the NFL. But Solomon Thomas told the story of his sister's suicide in an article on ESPN that came down Wednesday, and man, it was a reminder of how these players are real people with real lives and going through some difficult stuff and difficult times off the field, and also just a reminder that life is immensely more important than football. And so go to ESPN.com. Molly Knight was the author of that story, and Solomon Thomas really goes in detail, and Solomon Thomas is really healing from that life event of his sister committing suicide, and he tells that story, and man, it's something he's probably never going to completely heal from. So that piece on ESPN from Molly Knight telling that story of Solomon Thomas and his family and his sister's suicide, definitely worth your time there. All right, let's move on to the 49ers injury report from Wednesday's practices. Let's start with those who did not participate. Joshua Garnett, still out with that dislocated toe injury. Tackle Joe Staley, not injury-related. He was just getting that veteran day off, as he usually does, at least one day per week. I think it's the Wednesday practices. It's looking like that Joe Staley doesn't practice, which I'm totally fine with. He can, like I said last week, he can not practice all week for all I care. Maybe get one practice in, maybe get in the walkthrough, and we're good there. We need to keep Joe Staley as healthy as possible. And then Jaquaski Tart, dealing with his shoulder injury from last week, he did not practice either. Limited in practice Wednesday, Marquise Goodwin. So he's getting some work in. He's got that deep thigh bruise. He got some limited work in, as did guard Mike Person, who went last week with his foot injury. So unless there's a setback, it would appear that Mike Person again is ready to start and play right guard in week three. And then Akello Witherspoon dealing with a little bit of an ankle injury, and maybe that led to his poor performance last week, and I'm really looking for a bounce back. So hopefully Akello is healthy and ready to go, and it's going to be a tough task, but I think he's up to it, and I really want to see him bounce back against a high-powered offense and see how the 49ers defend the Chiefs in week three. That's going to be fun, and really see what Akello Witherspoon's made of to bounce back after a tough one, and I think he's the type of guy that's going to be able to do that. So that is the injury report from Wednesday's practices. Nothing concrete about who will play and who won't. I got to believe Goodwin, Person, and Witherspoon, who were limited, are going to be on pace to play, as is obviously Joe Staley, who's just getting his vet day off. So the two guys who look like they could be out, judging by guys who don't practice, if you never practice at all, you're probably not going to be able to play. That's Garnett. Person, I don't think practiced, but he's still able to go last week, so it's not guaranteed. But right now, Garnett not practicing with the toe injury and Tart with the shoulder injury. We'll see how those progress throughout the week. In roster news, Reuben Foster has been officially activated, and the 49ers had to make room for Reuben Foster, who came off the suspended list, and they did release offensive lineman Matt Tobin. So Matt Tobin, hardly knew you, never suited up for the 49ers. And a couple of quick quotes that I thought were great that came down my Twitter timeline on Wednesday. One from a non-49er, Jordan Matthews, who's actually a shadow 49er, so close enough. Jordan Matthews is a player I really liked coming out of Vanderbilt in college. And he's had a very disappointing NFL career so far, but he still's got size. Dude's 6'3", ran a 4.46 or 4.47 coming out of college, 6'3", 215. Made plays after the catch, had some good couple of years in Philly, but now the Philadelphia Eagles have brought him back. But The quote here was he was asked about his time in Buffalo. And it said, Jordan Matthews said he's a father now because of his year in Buffalo. Quote, there wasn't anything to do there but each other. So Jordan Matthews goes to Buffalo, gets hurt. He had some hamstring. I don't know if it's a hamstring injury that he's still dealing with that he also had in Buffalo, which explains some of why his career has sort of gone south. He had a case of the dropsies as well early in his career. But he also has a child now because there was nothing to do in Buffalo except have quiet time with his wife, apparently. So I thought that was a hilarious quote from Jordan Matthews. And our own Marquise Goodwin. Goodwin was asked about his speed compared to Tyreek Hill. And he didn't answer. His only answer was rolling up his sleeves and showing off his 2012 Olympics tattoo. He's got the tattoo of the Olympic rings on his arm. And he was not a sprinter on his Olympic team. He's actually an Olympic long jumper. But he did run that 4.27 officially electronic timed 40-yard dash at the Combine in 2012. He was on other sprinting teams in college at Texas. He was an All-American sprinter as well as long jumper. So obviously he has the speed. When it comes to Tyreek Hill, he ran faster at his pro day. But again, asterisk there, that is the pro day. Tyreek Hill did not have an electronically timed combine time. The bottom line is both those dudes are fast. And Breed of the Cheetah, who ran a 4.38, 4.36, I believe it was, at his pro day when he came out of college from Georgia Southern. Fast too, but Marquise Goodwin and Tyreek Hill are on another level, and it would be awesome to see those guys run. John Ross, Marquise Goodwin, Tyreek Hill, those are the three fastest dudes in the league. I don't think there's any question with that. Before Jeff joins me on the show, I'd like to take a moment to tell you guys about my bookie. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win the game, but if you think you know who's going to win these NFL games, you got to check out my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I tell people to bet with my bookie. They are your best bet this season. They've been in the business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is super easy to use. They have in-game live betting, over-unders on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. And a new bonus for you guys. My bookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate that special offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MYBOOKIE. And don't forget to use promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. And if you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m., you can get extra $25. Use the promo code LOCKEDON25 for that bonus. It's up to you guys, but I'd wait after dinner to take the extra money. At MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Okay, my guest today, you know him. He's a friend of the show, Jeff Deeney of Pro Football Focus. You can find him on Twitter at PFF_Jeff. He's the 49ers media correspondent at PFF. Jeff, how you doing, man? Always great to talk to you.
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. Had a good time at Levi's Stadium watching 49ers beat the Lions on Sunday, and now looking ahead to this Chiefs matchup, and the Chiefs are on fire. They're crazy. First, we got to kind of look backwards here before we look forward at the Chiefs, and you actually tweeted one out today that we can start there with Jimmy Garoppolo. You said through 2 weeks using play action, Jimmy Garoppolo has a 123.7 passer rating and 12 yards per attempt, and without play action, 51.9 rating. Less than half of that, 5.6 yards per attempt, and that those numbers would coincide with some of the struggles that the 49ers have on converting third downs. I thought that was a pretty telling stat, and it really just overall, it seems like the offense is out of sync, and it's odd because Jimmy Garoppolo came in not knowing the offense or his receivers, and things were more in sync through 5 weeks last year than they are this year after having a whole offseason together.
Yeah, no, it's kind of interesting. I think there's probably a bunch of different factors at play. And one, I think, is just, I think Shanahan's scheme is, you know, made to get guys open on play action. I think, you know, the little play action boot that gets Kittle open up in the flat is, you know, an obvious one right there. And I mean, I think the one that Kittle dropped against Minnesota, that could have been a 70-yard touchdown, another play action play, which would even padded his stats even more, as another example. I mean, I think other things, one, like you said, they struggle on third down. I think, you know, Shanahan's pointed out how the receivers kind of struggle getting separation a bit. I think that's probably another reason. You know, I think that, you know, one of the NFL next gen stats I saw yesterday, I think, was percentage of targets in tight windows or throwing to tight windows. And Garoppolo, I think, was second in the league as far as most percentage of targets to tight windows. I think that's another example of Shanahan's point, how the receivers aren't really getting separation. And yeah, in the Lions game, you were looking at some of the personnel sets and stuff too. And, you know, the Niners only use, you know, three wide receiver personnel like 25% of the time. The other, you know, they were mostly in 12 or 21 personnel. And the Lions actually still stayed in their nickel and dime packages during that time and not going to base. So it seemed like the Lions' strategy kind of was to kind of take away the pass and dare the Niners to beat them running the ball, which, you know, they obviously did. They put up 30 points and, you know, Breida had a huge day. But, yeah, I think Garoppolo's stats kind of suffered a little bit.
Yeah, and one of the telling stats I talked about earlier this week was the time he spent in the pocket on his sacks, which is something like 6.5 seconds in week two, where it had been, you know, just over 4 seconds per sack, which is one of those situations where the offensive line gets beat, you get sacked before you can make a play when it's around 4 seconds. So he's holding on to the ball longer, people aren't getting open. Does that point to you like just a straight-up talent thing? Like, are the 49ers really missing Marquise Goodwin that much? Do they need to go back to the drawing board as far as the wide receiver position goes, maybe next offseason? Is that something that the position group is lacking, or do you think it's more just all about timing and, you know, some young players, the rookie Dante Pettis? And it's funny because Shanahan didn't call him out by name in the press conference when he talked about that near pick six that Jimmy threw on a week two. But he said the receiver ran the wrong route, and it's pretty obvious going back and watching. The receiver on that side was Dante Pettis, so he didn't run a route that would have kept that that defender out of the flat. But then Jimmy also shouldn't be throwing that ball. So is it the receivers, do you think, or do you think they can get this going and it's just more of a timing thing?
No, you're exactly right on that last play. I think, you know, Breida was in the slot and Pettis was wide. I think, you know, I was charting that one actually. And I think Pettis just ran like a little 7-yard hitch route with an outside release. And obviously he's supposed to do something inside that either, you know, with a little bit of a rub on Breida's guy or some, at least something to distract him. Something inside breaking obviously didn't. And you know, we saw the week before Bourne had run the wrong route and it caused a pick six. Though in this case, I mean, obviously whether Pettis ran the wrong route or not, that was definitely not a ball Garoppolo should have thrown. But I mean, getting back to the original question, I think you're right. Goodwin, not having Goodwin is been huge. I think the last week and a half, you know, obviously he's someone who can create separation for himself rather easily with his speed, but he obviously opens up things for everybody else in different levels of the field also. I think they're really missing him more than I think some people might think. You know, so hopefully he'll be back this week. And then as far as the offensive line goes, I think, you know, like week one, you know, that was a tough test. I mean, you're playing the number one defense in the league, probably maybe the number one defensive line in the league, on the road, home opener, loud crowd. You know, they lose, you know, Garrett and Person, where you have McGlinchey playing guard, you know, for the first time since he was a little kid. You know, you had Gilliam as a backup tackle who hadn't really played most of the preseason because of the concussion. And, you know, they just kind of got eaten alive. There wasn't, you know, much they could do. And, they, you know, the Vikings really took advantage of that. Where last week, actually, the pass protection was good because Garoppolo only got pressured on, I think, 9 of his 31 or 33 dropbacks off the top of my head. But somewhere in the 20-something percentage, which is below average. And honestly, several of those 9 were because Garoppolo was holding the ball too long and took a sack, or if he'd gotten rid of the ball, you know, on time or just thrown it away, it wouldn't have been a pressure drawback. So the pass protection was actually pretty good last week. But I think the biggest thing that could help at this point is Goodwin coming back.
You mentioned the offensive line there, and PFF actually graded all of the 32 offensive lines in the league and ranked them after week two. And the 49ers were 6th in the league on the offensive line. And the starting lineup there, the grades go Joe Staley with the top grade, as you would expect, 86.9, Lakin Tomlinson, 70.3, Weston Richburg, not so great, 55, right guard Mike Person, 68.3, and right tackle Mike McGlinchey, 55.4. Now, you might hear those numbers and think, oh, that doesn't sound that great, but it's funny because the way PFF grades, I think offensive linemen are the one position where the numbers are usually pretty low. And I think that's really ruffled some feathers throughout, you know, football and the industry. And people see that number and they think, oh, gosh, man, that's a trash player. Or how could you grade my player that low? Or how could you grade me that low? So I think PFF takes some crap just because the way they grade. And when you grade a player and all you give is a number and you just see a number and you think, you know, Weston Richburg, if you said, hey, man, you grade out as a 55, he'd probably slap smack you in the face. So, but when you look at the overall line, those numbers don't blow you away, but that's the 6th best ranked offensive line in the league after week two.
Yeah, and you look at McGlinchey, I mean, his grade's actually that low probably just because, you know, he had to play over about half the game at guard last week, which kind of hurt him a bit too. But I mean, if you just took his grade as a tackle, I'm sure it'd be quite a bit higher.
Yeah, and he only allowed two hurries on 36 pass block snaps, and that was the seventh highest graded tackle of the week there. So, yeah, so tackle, he's looked much better, which is where he plays, which would make a lot of sense. And I love just the selfless attitude. He's like, yeah, we need a guard. And he's like, okay, let's go. And it's, I think it's part of the mentality of why the 49ers liked him and targeted him in round one. So the line is playing pretty good. The run game seems to be at a place where I think 49ers fans should be happy, especially with what looks to be like the guy who's going to take over ownership of that role at running back in Matt Breida.
Yeah, I mean, Breida was, you know, without, you know, pretty obvious, but he was our top graded running back in week two on PFF, and he's actually second overall after 2 weeks. He's leading the league in rushing. He's got leading yards per carry too. So, and he's getting some help from the line. I think there was someone, one of our colleagues, that tweeted a stat today that of guys who's had 20 or more carries, he was getting hit behind the line the least amount. So, definitely one, I think that his offensive line is helping him. But two, it's also him not being indecisive and hitting the hole quickly too, which helps. But, you know, I think between him and Alfred Morris, I know Morris has kind of been getting kind of like a 55-45 thing with Morris getting a few more snaps. I think that might kind of switch a little more the other way. I mean, I don't think you ever see Breida being the bell cow, just because I think, you know, Shanahan kind of likes to mix it up. And plus, you know, Breida's coming back from a shoulder injury. I don't think they want to mess with that too much. But, I mean, the running game has been strong. I think the only thing you'd like to see them be a little more contributors in the passing game. I think that's where, you know, losing Jerick McKinnon really hurts them a little quite a bit because, you know, Morris has never been a pass catcher his entire career. And, you know, Breida was, you know, once Breida had the ball in his hands, he's definitely a threat as a pass catcher. But, you know, his drop rate was actually the highest of any running back in the league last year. And he struggled in pass protection, too. So he was kind of a liability as a rookie. But I think the potential's there. So hopefully, I think this season, as time moves along, he gets more snaps, that he can be more of a threat in the passing game as well.
Yeah, and you haven't seen Breida really line up and do a lot of those things that I think they thought Jerick McKinnon would do as a receiver, and the balls he has caught is more just, you know, the regular stuff out of the flats and things. And even when they got right in the red zone last week, they put Kendrick Bourne back in the backfield, which I thought was pretty telling, and a wrinkle that I loved. And I thought maybe Richie James might see some of that stuff because he's, you know, pretty used to being in the backfield in different positions from his days in college and even back to high school. But to your point about the Matt Breida thing and not getting hit behind the line, that goes right along with the next gen stat. I saw that Matt Breida led the league in top speed. It was something like 10 plus miles per hour before you get to the line of scrimmage. So he's getting holes and he's seeing them and he's decisive and he's hitting those holes.
Yeah, I guess you got to use that in that cheetah argument they were having on Twitter today.
That was part of that, I think.
Him and Tyreek Hill.
Right. And then,
but yeah, no, he's definitely been very impressive. So it's kind of a sign of, you know, you talk about, I mean, this goes back to like the draft and Saquon Barkley, who I love, but I mean, you know, spending a number two pick on a running back when someone like Breida can be had as an undrafted free agent, this kind of just shows you as far as value in draft picks and stuff.
Oh man, I want to get more into that, but I've got to remind the folks, I'm talking to Jeff Deeney right now of Pro Football Focus. He's my guest today on the show. We will continue that conversation momentarily, but first I want to tell you guys about Swap.com. Isn't it crazy how much we pay for new brand name clothes? Why do we buy new kids' clothes? That one hits home for me. They just outgrow them in a few months, less than a few months. I'm blown away by how fast my son grows through these clothes, and unless maybe he's going to be a giant, and he's growing very, very quickly. It's starting to frighten me. But wouldn't it be great if there was a place to discover awesome discounts on gently used clothes? There is Swap.com, the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. Stop driving to store after store and sifting through racks. Easily sift through millions of clothes in seconds on Swap.com with the easy-to-use filters to find just what you need. Over 14 million tons of textiles are wasted each year. Shopping secondhand at Swap.com helps prevent textile waste from polluting the environment, which is something you can feel good about. With Swap.com, you can save up to 90% off retail price on your favorite brands like Lululemon, Carter's, Nike, J.Crew, and Gap. Quality hand-inspected items are added daily. If something doesn't fit, enjoy hassle-free returns within 30 days. special offer to our listeners. As is usually the case with our sponsors here on the Locked On Podcast Network, get 35% off select items for your first order with promo code LOCKEDON. Plus, find new deals every day at swap.com. So you were talking there about the undrafted free agent, Matt Breida, that's showing things. And I thought it was really interesting that the leading rusher in the league after 2 weeks is an undrafted running back in Matt Breida. The leading rusher for rookies in the NFL is Lindsey from the Denver Broncos, undrafted running back. They drafted a running back higher that everyone thought was going to be the starter there. This stacked class of running backs, and it's an undrafted rookie right now that's leading all rookies in rushing yardage. And then you look at the 49ers' week two win. Matt Breida touchdown, Kendrick Bourne touchdown, Garrett Celek touchdown. All undrafted players. So the draft just doesn't matter. I think that's where we're at now.
Yeah, well, it may not go that far, but I think definitely with running back, it's something where I think you have to look at what, you know, kind of value you're getting. Mm-hmm. I think you can still get, obviously, quality guy player in the draft, or in like Breida's case, as an undrafted free agent. We see guys like, you know, I think Barkley's going to be a great player, but, I mean, aside from the one run, he hasn't, you know, done a whole lot with the Giants. And, I mean, you know, Seattle and Rashad Penny's another guy who I actually really like in college too, but, I mean, he hasn't done a ton for the Seahawks either. So, this is kind of a PFF-wide thing, but, I mean, spending first round and high draft picks on a running back, we're not huge fans of that.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir, man. I've been running back agnostic for a long time, and it's nice to have a talented guy that can do a lot of things. And we just talked about how it was nice to have Jerick McKinnon and his ability as a receiver. And so it's not that they don't matter at all. It's just that if you're ranking your 22 starters, it would be probably fullback last, tailback second to last. You know, something about like that. You know, taking special teams guys out of it. It's just not where you should put your resources, because like we've seen Matt Breida leading the league in rushing, it's just – if everything else is good, the running back is just going to follow suit and be able to tear stuff up. And I think the New York Giants will see down the road, no matter how good Saquon Barkley is, and it's not so much hating on Saquon Barkley, if any of the quarterbacks they could have had, especially Sam Darnold, if the team across town, exactly, the New York Jets, have a franchise quarterback and Sam Darnold, and they've got a running back, they screwed the pooch hard on that one. And you can see that coming a mile away. It's like, you just don't. Running back number two, just don't do it. Please don't do it.
Could not agree more.
Let's see. So I want to get to the defensive side of the ball. Pat Mahomes has been outrageous through 2 weeks so far. And surprisingly, actually, though, Patrick Mahomes is not the number one rated quarterback at Pro Football Focus. That would be Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's got a 98.8 rating, which is something I don't remember seeing over the course of multiple games at PFF. And in fact, when you look at the stats here and the breakdown, that's a color. It's like a purplish color when you're that high of a ranking. And I thought blue was the darkest color. It actually goes to purple.
Yeah, apparently breaking the scale. I think if I'm correct, someone had tweeted today that his grade after 2 weeks is the highest of any quarterback since we've been doing grading, actually. So that's amazing. And it's funny with Fitzpatrick. I mean, he seems to have a few weeks where he is just looks like, you know, the best quarterback you've ever seen. And then all of a sudden he regresses back to kind of reality a little bit, so we'll see how long he can keep it going. But Mahomes is definitely second in our rankings behind Fitzpatrick right now. I mean, you know, 10 touchdowns, no interceptions. I mean, he's looked incredible so far. You know, it's interesting, you know, he's gone from someone, you know, Alex Smith, who was kind of more, you know, conservative, a little bit dink and dunk guy. I think his average target last year was 7.3 yards downfield, and Mahomes for 2 weeks has actually had 11.3. So, I mean, 4 yards more per target is pretty significant. 28% of Mahomes' targets so far this year have been go routes, which is more than double the league average. So definitely pushing the ball downfield quite a bit, and obviously very successful doing so far.
Yeah, and he's got those weapons that are also very good getting down the field in, obviously, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce for a tight end, that's probably the second best to Gronk, the tight end in the league as far as receivers go. And then Conley on the outside with Sammy Watkins, both those guys are like 4-3, 4-4 flat guys. So they can get down the field, which is kind of scary. And I think Kareem Hunt's a pretty good receiver, even though he hasn't been used much in his NFL career as a receiver out of the backfield. I like that ability that he has as well. So Pat Mahomes has his choice of downfield targets and threats. And so it's going to be tough for that 49ers defense on Sunday. So looking at that defense, I think there's going to be a lot of focus, obviously, on whoever's lining up across from Richard Sherman. I assume Witherspoon, even though he kind of got benched at the end of that last game, is going to be back, and he's going to be raring to go and ready to compete. Kawan Williams in the slot. And then the two safeties, which are players in Adrian Colbert and Jaquaski Tartt that really ended the season on a high note last year, and they kind of haven't shown that quite yet. But and I think Tartt, both week one and two, started off slow and then ended the game better until he actually got hurt. And so I'm not sure exactly where Tartt is yet as far as if he's going to be able to play or not, limited in practice. But what have you seen there from the secondary aside from Richard Sherman, who's been his usual self?
Yeah, I mean, Sherman's really, I mean, he's stat-wise, I mean, just watching the tape last week, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, he, you know, good coverage. I mean, Stafford was even looking the right side of the field most of the time when he's going back to pass. It was amazing. And I mean, so Sherman's played 99 coverage snaps the first 2 weeks. He's been given up one catch for 18 yards. That's it. Only four targets. So both those ratios as far as snaps to target and catches allowed are leading, you know, all starting quarterbacks or cornerbacks, excuse me. The 18 yards is second behind Patrick Peterson. So stat-wise, I mean, he looks as good as ever. You know, the other side, obviously, they were picking on Witherspoon quite a bit. And, you know, he did have the ankles thing he's kind of dealing with during the week. And I agree with you. I think if the ankle's good, he'll be back in the lineup this week. But he gave up 99 yards on eight catches and 12 targets. Two touchdowns before I think they finally benched him for Ward late in the game. But, you know, it's interesting because Tyreek Hill kind of lines up all over the place. You know, he runs usually about a third of his routes, you know, lined up wide left, another third wide right, another third in the slot. So, you know, with the Niners kind of, you know, having Sherman on the left and Witherspoon on the right, you know, Kaylen Williams obviously in the slot, that, you know, Reed kind of dictate who he wants Tyreek Hill to go up against this week. So, I mean, I think that's going to be interesting to see what he does and if he does anything differently with where Tyreek Hill matches up. And then I think the other threat with Tyreek Hill obviously is in the punt return game. He's had, you know, 91-yard punt return this year already. And I think that's where kind of Raheem Mostert comes into play. He's been one of the best gunners in the league when he's been healthy the last couple of years. So I think that's kind of be an interesting special teams matchup, is to see if, you know, Mostert can kind of neutralize Hill in the punt return game.
We've talked about secondary here. Let's move a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage. Let's talk about the guys on the second level, particularly the rookie in Fred Warner, and how much of a difference is going to make now to get Reuben Foster back in week three.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, having Reuben Foster back is huge. You know, I think if it's not this week, though, I think it probably will be, I think you'll see, you know, Warner at the mic and staying there, and then Foster moving at the will. I mean, I know there's a chance you might see Malcolm Smith come back, but, you know, Warner graded really highly, you know, week one. He's one of the top linebackers through week one. Kind of fell back to earth a little bit last week, but I think, I mean, those two guys, I think, are your future, and I think Warner's shown enough the first 2 weeks to keep his job, and obviously, you know, Reuben showed to be already one of the elite linebackers in the league last year. So I think having those two guys back and hopefully healthy and staying on the field will be huge going forward.
Cassius Marsh hasn't graded out very well, and he hasn't made a huge impact. He's made a couple of splash plays here and there, but overall not a lot. And then Solomon Thomas has almost been sort of usurped by Eric Armstead, who's been the guy who's been rushing from inside, and I thought that would be Solomon Thomas's job. What do you see there on the defensive line? And obviously it's led by DeForest Buckner, who has not disappointed at all, and he's been pretty dominant and really has that arm over, that swim move that it doesn't seem like any left guard in the league can defend against.
No, I mean, I kind of thought that, you know, Buckner versus Ragnow was going to be a definite, you know, mismatch, and it definitely was. You know, and Buckner's second in the league with 3.5 sacks so far. He's got 9 total pressures, which is tied with Armstead for the team high. You know, so, I mean, he hasn't missed a beat playing at a Pro Bowl level. Unfortunately, he's been most of their pass rush. You know, so Armstead's getting in there a little bit. You know, Solomon Thomas, I think they're still trying to figure out their role. I think they're getting close. I mean, you know, he's a guy, you know, he was good against the run last year as a rookie. I mean, he still is this year. I think that's kind of his strength. But he's not an edge rusher. I think, you know, I think that's pretty plain to see. And I think, you know, definitely he was very efficient pass rusher in college, rushing inside. He didn't do a lot last year, but was, you know, in our metrics, when he did, was more effective that way. And even just a little bit he's done the first 2 weeks, he's shown that he's been better inside. I think the first third down, they had him rush inside and blew by his guy, but then missed the sack. And then I think Elijah Lee missed a tackle on a catch, and they end up converting anyway. But I mean, it's just kind of an example of, you know, how much better of a pass rusher he is from inside. So I think what we're going to see from Thomas is, you know, he's going to be in the base defense, going to be that Leo guy, hopefully playing against a run, and then get in that inside rotation. You know, the problem is they already have a lot of guys who can rush the passer inside, you know, between Buckner and Armstead and, you know, even Sheldon Day. So he's going to get in that rotation, but know, he may not get a ton of snaps rushing the passer inside, but I do think that's where he's most effective. And like you said, the edge rusher, I think, is, you know, the weakest part of the team. You know, they obviously, they really didn't do much in the offseason. They brought in Atachu, who didn't even make the squad. They didn't draft anybody. I know you and I are both kind of Harold Landry guys in the draft. Yeah. And he's looked pretty good in Tennessee so far. But, yeah, Marsh has really struggled. He's had 65 pass rushes in the 2 weeks, and he's got two hurries to show for, and that's unfortunately it. Which, you know, we have our pass rush productivity formula, and he's near the bottom of the league as far as edge rushers go so far through 2 weeks. So not really getting much off the edge between, you know, Marsh and then, you know, when Thomas is rushing in base. So that's unfortunately a weakness you're probably not going to be able to do much with until the offseason. I mean, you know, Dumervil's retired. I don't really think that's an option anymore. You know, Khalil Mack, that ship has sailed. So, but that's going to be something I think that's going to be a question mark for the rest of the season.
And I love how John Gruden is at press conferences talking about how difficult it is to find good pass rushers now. I mean, yeah, is that guy off his mind or what? He's trolling everybody. He's got to be.
That whole situation just baffles me, how you would trade your best player on your team like that when, we could do a whole other show on that, but that's just, that whole situation completely baffled me. I don't know what they're doing.
It's pretty unbelievable. And kind of, if you're not a Raiders fan, it's kind of fun to watch and just marvel at. If you're probably very frustrated if you're a Raiders fan.
I feel bad for Raider fans. I feel really bad for Oakland Raider fans because, you know, it almost seems like you're going in a little bit of a rebuild mode. You know, with, you know, giving, you know, trading Mack away for draft picks and stuff. And
right as they leave,
you know,
town.
The long-term deal. And right as they're, you know, here for a few years, and then they're going to Vegas by the time, you know, hope, you know, you start building up. So, kind of feel sorry for the Raider fan base right now. That's not cool.
So talking with Chris from the Locked On Chiefs podcast on yesterday's show, and he was, you know, raving about the offense, and he doesn't even think that there's much regression coming for Patrick Mahomes. But he's also equally down on that Chiefs defense. Is this going to be a shootout? And if it is a shootout, is it something the 49ers do you think can win? Because I'm looking at right now, I'm on Pro Football Focus and looking at the defensive side of the ball for Kansas City, and there's not a lot of green marks there.
A lot of red, yeah. I definitely think, you know, obviously it's going to be a hostile, loud environment, but I definitely think the Niners should be able to move the ball. I mean, the Chiefs have given up 860 yards passing in two games, which is over 100 yards more than any other team in the league so far. And a little bit of that, they jumped out the lead early in both games, and teams have had to come from behind a little bit. But still, that's a ridiculous amount. And, you know, they're not – their pass rush hasn't been that great either. And I know Chris Jones missed practice today. So that's, you know, another question mark from them up front. It doesn't look like Eric Berry's going to be back for this week. So, I mean, I definitely think the Niners are going to be able to move the ball. It's, you know, obviously having to deal with the crowd noise and trying to keep pace with the Chiefs' explosive attack.
Yeah, and looking at that defensive line, I think that's going to be the key for Kansas City. Justin Houston, Chris Jones, D Ford, if they're able to get some pressure on Garoppolo, I think that's the key, because in the back half, the 49ers, and look, if the 49ers can't take advantage of this and can't get right against Kansas City, I think we might see a problem here for the 49ers offense, because this is the defense to do it against.
No, absolutely. I think it's just doing, if this was a home game, I like their chances a lot better, especially, you know, offense moving the ball, but just, like I said, Airhead's probably one of the loudest, if not the loudest, stadium in the league. So that makes things a little more difficult. But obviously, this is a defense that you can move the ball.
That is Jeff Deeney of Pro Football Focus. You can find him on Twitter at PFF_Jeff. Jeff, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks again for coming on the show.
No problem. Anytime.
And that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On 49ers. Thanks again to Jeff for joining the show. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Be back tomorrow. You know, we're long overdue for a mailbag segment here on the show. So Friday mailbag, what are you guys wondering about? What do we want to talk about here on this Friday leading up to the Week 3 at Kansas City matchup? Hit me up on Twitter at BD Peacock. Email the show, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. And I'll talk to you guys then right here on Locked On 49ers.